the bubble. Hello and welcome to Burst the Bubble. You're listening to Chem FM, and more specifically, Burst the Bubble, a show about silly news. You know, I was asked during the week to define the show in more concrete terms than that, so I have. Imagine, if you will, if news was a big pile of bricks. Or concrete. Actually, missed that opportunity. Imagine it was a big pile of concrete. Then, you got shows like sort of Having It News For You and The News Quiz. You know, people like that. They're sort of the equivalent of the sort of the well-moneyed aristocracy who are going to come to the big pile of bricks and or concrete and take it and build marvellous castles and mansions, here symbolising entertaining panel shows. Then you've got sort of local journalists, the sort of, you know, the local equivalent, Radio Gloucestershire's amusement from the paper, a title they worked on for some time. They kind of come along and take a modest quantity of bricks and go and build themselves a sort of a fairly all right sort of two up, two down. You know, nothing special, but good. And then you've got us. We're sort of the gibbering transients. Who sort of show up and take the sort of shattered wreckage that nobody else particularly wanted, here symbolising trivial stories about nothing much in particular, and then try and fashion it into some sort of crude semblance of shelter, perhaps by placing it atop their head and saying, it's a house, it's a roof, it's a slate. That's what I say when I'm homeless. yes. At the end of that metaphor, we're left with a show about silly news stories. So, let's get started with the first one, with, I should mention, my guest, Mr. James Howe.
Hello.
Now then, James, story number one today is all about Venezuela.
Indeed, or as I initially misread it, Vuvuzela. So, if you find this story gets a bit boring, just imagine we're saying Vuvuzela instead of Venezuela. It makes everything a lot more confusing, but perhaps more entertaining. I don't know.
So basically, what the story is that the president of Venezuela, Mr. Hugo Chavez, has taken great offence to the fact that a TV program has been produced in which there are two young children named Colombia and Venezuela, in a sort of a piece of lightning satire coming out of South America there. in which the child named Venezuela has a soap dog named Little Hugo, and it appears that that Mr. Chavez has more or less blown his top and stomped on the network to ban such filth.
So, Chris, could you just clarify, when you say soap dog, is that a dog made of soap or a dog on a soap opera?
I think it's an actual dog made of soap, although it could be a breed of dog. Maybe there's a type of dog which is useful when washing yourself.
Perhaps. I mean, like a loofah dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something.
Like, you know how poodles have, they've got very sort of curly, ringlety fur. And that looks kind of like, if pressed, you might be able to dry your hair with it.
I'm still sceptical as to the nature of the soapiness of this dog, but we'll move on, we'll move on. This is a soap opera in Colombia, I think, on a channel that apparently has got into all sorts of trouble in the past for airing such scathing shows as The Simpsons.
Lightning political satire in there, obviously.
Yes, Mr. Chavez is indeed trying to get the TV station in Colombia, which is not even the country he's in charge of, to stop broadcasting this soap dog called Little Hugo.
Which is, as political epithets go, it's a mixed message at worst, because it's a dog, but it's made of soap. It could have been a dog made of poo.
Well, it may be made of soap.
Well, I mean, that's okay. Assuming generously for the moment that it's made of soap, then
as little sense as that makes.
And it's odd to name it as well, because if you name your soap dog, I mean soaps.
Again, another reason why I thought it was an actual dog.
soaps are expendable, right? So are dogs, I suppose.
Well, I suppose if it was a dog made of soap, they were naming Little Hugo. Wouldn't that be quite good? Because, you know, it cleans stuff up.
Right, yeah.
That would be a nice political message.
It
Whereas if it were an actual dog, and I was a ruler of a South American country, then I would be perhaps a bit upset.
See, I think I'd be slightly more upset by the soap one, because amongst other things, it is inanimate, and I don't want people saying that, you know, that the best I'm for really is to be picked up and scrubbed against things.
That's true. I wouldn't like that to be insinuated about me.
It's possible I'm under reading the metaphor, of course.
Possibly. So I think the best thing to come out of this story, though, is the caption that the BBC News website has chosen to go with. The wonderful, wonderful pun of Mr. Chavez's critics say he's trying to muzzle the media to prevent criticism.
Oh!
Which I think is another belter from the chap who writes the captions at the BBC.
He works as well as he's got to go, I know.
Yeah. He always brightens my day.
Oh, dear. Right. I should execute a link, but I can't remember what the next story is. So why doesn't everybody just pretend I spent the last 10 seconds doing a link? Retrospective link. It's crows. Crows. Story number 2 of today is all about crows and their curious ability to use tools, which is rather cool, as things go. I mean, it knocks us down in the great hierarchy of life, rather.
Yeah, they are approaching at our heels there.
Our possession of heels is going to outdo them for
true.
A little
we
while.
Do have heels and they do not.
We which actually, no, that just stops us from catching them up. Like, once they've overtaken us, we're going to need a new metaphor.
I don't know. They have the advantage of wings, of course. We could clip their wings.
True.
Both metaphorically and actually.
That would do the trick, yeah. What would their equivalent be? Like, what's our unique selling point as a species?
T-shirts?
Remove our T-shirts.
Yeah, we could all get a bit chilly. I don't know.
It would.
What do we have that crows don't?
I'm really struggling to think.
Maybe we should open that up to the listeners.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You too can contribute to inane waffling on the matter of crows. Get in touch with us on studio at camfm.co.uk and share your views as to the unique selling point of the human race.
Yeah, I mean, this may sound like an old story, but this isn't just crows using tools to get food. This is them using tools to poke things that they don't know about.
Yep. What they've basically done is they placed crows in a... I don't know, actually.
A crowery.
A crow environment, yes.
A crowery.
A crowery. Try saying that 10 times fast whilst drunk. And what they did is they put them in the crowery along with some tools, so like sticks and
sticks,
things like that.
It is just sticks. Sticks. We don't want to alarm people.
It's not like chainsaws.
No, they're not. It's not like the birds crossed with Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They lack the upper body strength to wield a chainsaw. It is just sticks.
That's true. You were like 10 of them together in the manner of James and the Giant Peach.
In James of the Giant Peach do 10 crows wield a chainsaw?
They don't wield a chainsaw. They lift a pin.
That's seagulls. Oh. And they were definitely forced to do that against their will.
That's true, actually. Yeah, they were lassoed. But, okay, if you were to lasso crows, what
if
do you
reckon? If you were to lasso a load of crows...
Then you could get them to lift up a chainsaw.
Peach. Lift up a chainsaw, yes.
Yeah, we don't want a peach lifting. That's pointless.
No. I thought for a minute you were going for the sort of Power Rangers... If enough crows join together into the shape of a person, they could wield such tools as chainsaws.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly blenders.
And they'd be very difficult to defeat in you know, sort of traditional human weaponry. Wouldn't really do anything because they'd be able to part and so on.
Did you just separate the crows from other crows rather than separating bits of crows from themselves?
Right, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And we're back to the story.
Oh yes, yes.
Yeah. So these crows in their crowery are introduced to unfamiliar objects, and they basically go grab a stick and poke it.
Yeah. It's a pretty decent result in that the crows did something, which is good. I mean, they could have just sat there trying vainly to eat the items they were given, and they didn't, which is good. What they were actually given, for interest's sake, they were given, let's see if I can find the appropriate paragraph.
So a rubber snake.
A rubber snake, yes.
A rubber spider.
Yep, indeed. and a tin of paint.
A tin of paint.
Which is interesting.
Unfortunately, they've not provided the video of a crow poking a tin of paint, because that sounds like it might have been amusing.
That does sound, that would actually be better than the experiment that was actually carried out. So, what I want to see here is, I want to get their paper and find what were their hypotheses. Like, what were the best things they imagined a crow could do using a rubber snake, a rubber spider, and a tin of paint?
So you think that people getting crows to poke sticks at rubber spiders are following the traditional scientific method?
Well, it seems likely they'll at least written down some words justifying that.
Well, they've probably written down some words.
They're probably not just like running naked through the woods, just abusing wildlife. They almost certainly have some sort of academic affiliation.
Unless the crows are now so advanced they wrote down the results themselves.
It's possible, yes.
Perhaps using a stick dipped in a tin of paint.
Yeah, yeah.
To scrawl the conclusions of the experiment.
They're going to need to somehow get past the journals. They're going to need to impersonate a human well enough.
Well, you just, as I said, you get enough crows together, put them, like, in a shirt.
And it is quite rude if somebody comes into the room to say, "Are you a collective of crows?" So most people would just let that go.
They would.
Yeah, you don't want to ask that question. Because, I mean, if the answer was no, what would you say? If you said, "Are you a collective of crows?" And they sort of struck themselves firmly on the forehead and said, "No, that's a skull."
Well, forehead is a bit... An amorphous group of beaks doesn't... I wouldn't really strike myself on that.
It's pretty challenging, especially getting those particular crows to agree to the manoeuvre.
Indeed.
So you're really at the... You're winning if you're the crow that's in the advantageous parts of the human body. I'm thinking of your fists and so on.
Then you should have
You get to have all the fun.
Well, you get to be battered against things.
True. I was thinking it wouldn't be boring. Like, if you were the crow, were the crow who was like representing the gallbladder, then you don't really have a whole lot to do.
In a situation where a collective of crows are impersonating a human,
yeah,
I don't think it's necessary for them to replicate the precise intricacies of the internal organs of the human in order to externally appear to be human.
Obviously, it's not necessary, no, but the crows are purists.
Oh, it's an academic exercise.
Yeah, obviously.
Oh, okay.
As we've established, the joke's on us.
Fine, I shall say no more on the subject. I think many people hope we won't either.
Yeah. Well, let's obey that will of the people, by which I mean take a brief musical break. We'll be back after this with more waffling about different things.
On air, online and across Cambridge.
Your station.
Your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble, a story about frivolous news with me, Christopher Smoten.
And me, James Howe.
That was Feeling Good by Muse. And we're going to be talking, let's get right on, we're talking about some more nonsense. First and foremost, Christmas-related nonsense, because we had a little bit left over.
And also linking to our previous story, as this is also about birds.
Aha, yes. So the campaign for equal human status can continue. In this case, by being allowed to celebrate Christmas, which is fair enough, what with how we tend to murder them at that time.
Only some of them.
Specific ones, obviously. Nobody wants to eat a crow, for example.
No.
They've really got that going, actually.
Yeah.
Undesirable food. Like, going on human tool usage.
We also got a response of how we are better than crows.
We did, yes.
Yeah, we have opposable thumbs, which was handily pointed out, and crows do not. So for the moment, I think we're ahead.
So, thank you, 2.98.213.115.
Yeah, as you haven't given a name...
We're going to identify you by your IP address. So.
We also suspect you might be a crow trying to throw us off the scent. But there we are.
That is actually in the crow IP range.
That is, yes.
They sneakily registered it during the early days of the internet.
Yeah.
When checking procedures were quite lax.
They've got all that block. Anyway, back to Christmas.
Back to Christmas. Oh, yes. Okay, so this story is all about more birds, specifically doves in this case, and their cunning plan to perpetuate Christmas.
Well, one dove.
Well, yeah, wait. But, you know, he's clearly the leader of a movement.
Yeah. Okay, so, there's a... Where is this village?
It's a village.
It's a village.
In Villagingdon, which is a place in Gloucestershire. No, it's
Malaig?
It's at the very least somewhere in Scotland. Oh, the article writers neglect to mention.
Okay, so there's a village in Scotland where they have a Christmas tree, as villages do, but they've not been able to take it down because there's a dove living in it.
Ah, yes. Now, so far so mundane, you might think. But my question to you is, what's the dove's plan here?
I think it is to make a nest, lay some eggs. Standard dove procedure.
That is standard dove procedure. But entertain with me just for a moment.
The
possibility that it is perhaps exceeding standard dove procedure and venturing into novel dove endeavour.
Nesting in a tree.
No, but it's the Christmas tree, right? Christmas trees are not good things to nest in. What with how they're pointy. You know, even the most sensible of apes can figure that out.
They're not that pointy on the dove scale.
What's the dove scale of
universal scale of pointiness?
What's the standard unit? Like what's like the base unit?
I'm going to have to retract that, I'm afraid. To a dove, being dove-sized, the tree is not that pointy. If you see what I mean.
No, that doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, like, it's... Okay, so
on the macro scale...
You know how a table knife is very much pointy to a human?
Yes.
And also to a dove?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But no, to us, they're sort of one big triangle, which is pointy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But when you get in there, it's less pointy.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, okay. So this is like if you're an amoeba living on the head of a pin, going, it's nicely rounded. Whilst the person using it goes, it's pointy. Yeah, okay. No, that's fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I accept your argument regarding pointiness.
The thing I'm confused by is the quote from one of the villagers saying, "It's a Christmas miracle." When
it took place after Christmas.
Well, no, the simple fact of you put up a tree and a bird goes in it. I don't really see what's miraculous about that.
That is, yeah, as you established,
I mean,
standard dove procedure.
On the scale of miracles, and again, no, this is a... Yeah, on the scale of miracles, that's quite low down. That scores perhaps a 0.2.
Yeah, 0.2 pontiffs.
Yeah.
One pontiff is the miraculous power of the Pope.
Indeed.
Like, his ability to just conjure up miracle on demand. I think his standard is he's able to produce a goblet of wine. Which he doesn't do very often, because obviously people tend to bring him wine. So it's a bit of a redundant power. It's kind of...
True.
You'd really want to, like, contribute that to somebody who doesn't need it, really. Because a lot of people would really quite like the ability to go, hajam, wine. One pontiff expended.
I don't remember the last time that happened.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
They don't like to march it out.
No.
The genuinely supernatural gets quite scary, so they tend to keep that behind closed doors.
I imagine it could be useful, though again, as you say, redundant, as there's quite a lot of wine in Italy to begin with.
Yeah, right. I mean, originally that was because of the Pope, obviously, but people started making it of their own accord.
I think originally it was the Romans. I'm quite sure they predate the Pope.
He was inspired into... Or maybe he made a thing which is coincidentally resembles wine. You know, like the Romans had wine. And then he went, hajam, I call this Pope juice. And people went, that's almost exactly identical to red wine. And he went, yeah, that's what I meant. I call it wine.
I'm sure that must have happened at some point.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Backing away from the Pope for a moment.
It's always best to do that. You never want to turn your back on him.
Yeah, of course.
Always maintain eye contact.
He's a sly pontiff.
He is a sly pontiff.
So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so in summary, some Scottish people are amazed that they've got a dove in their tree.
But the doves are trying to carry on Christmas and therefore take down Christmas-related birds. Moving swiftly on to something ever so slightly more sensible.
It's not bird-related in the slightest.
It is not, unless you count the fact that in Belgium there are birds, which there are, but anyway...
Oh, you've given away it's about Belgium.
I have. But which particular facial area will it relate to? They don't know that.
They don't know that yet.
Yeah, well.
Shall we tell them the story?
Go on then.
In Belgium, an actor whose name I cannot pronounce. I'm going to go for Perlverde. Perhaps.
Perlverde. Yeah,
it's
pool word.
Pool word, yeah. This guy is calling a Belgium-wide protest that everyone should grow their beards until the government sorts itself out.
Which is, yeah. I believe the precise formal words used was, we're going to grow beards until Belgium rises to greatness again. Which could be a wait.
That could be a while. I don't think Belgium's ever risen to greatness.
Yeah, it really, I mean...
They sort of peaked with Tintin.
And even that, you know, that was very much one man. You know, you can't really... People in Belgium weren't sort of going along going, I too can write charming detective novels about a young man and a small white dog that could be used as a towel.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the background to this is Belgium hasn't really had a government for the last 6 months, for one reason or another, at which point I think they should just disband.
That would do the trick. They just could donate the country to somebody who needs one.
Exactly. I mean, if you can't manage to actually have a consistent government in a country that, frankly, well, would anyone miss Belgium?
It's one of those things, you know, you could drive through it and not know.
Yeah. You just give the Dutch bit back to the Netherlands and the French bit back to the French. Everyone will be happy.
Well, what, if you're going to give away the country, why not mix it up a bit? You know, give it to, Ghana. Because they could do with more country.
I know they've got quite a lot of land.
They've got a reasonable amount.
If you're going to be giving it to people who need more country, then Liechtenstein or something like that is going to be...
Yeah, Monaco.
Yeah.
Greater Monaco. That'd actually be all right. I'd go to Greater Monaco, formerly known as Belgium.
Be more confusing, though. Because then you'll have a country full of Dutch and French people.
Named Monaco. Do you think the Belgians would adopt the norms of Monaco in order to save confusion?
What are the norms of Monaco?
Gambling, I think.
Is it
tax evasion?
Gambling and tax evasion.
I'm pretty sure tax evasion's in there.
Marrying film stars.
Yeah, that's true. Hosting motor races?
Yes.
And inexplicably doing so in the centre of a big city. Yeah. Yeah.
Those are the norms of Monaco.
Those are the norms of Monaco.
Or, as it's otherwise known, all we know about Monaco. Yeah. So a number of people have pointed out sort of the flaws in this protest. The first, of course, being having to wait until Belgium rises again. The second is that the 50% of the population are unable to protest.
True, yes.
Probably more than 50%, because you've got the women and then the children as well.
True, yeah. Yeah, those politically astute prepubescent children will be quite unable to express their ire.
Indeed.
You could wear big comedy beards, but that wouldn't really convey the same message.
No, if it conveys a message at all.
And also, if I was the Belgian government, I would set up a business manufacturing comedy beards, thus meaning it will be a win-win situation. But either Belgium rises again, or I make a swift buck off of beards.
If you were the Belgian government, then the protest would stop, because then there'd be a Belgian government.
True, and it would be me.
It would be you.
And that would be advantageous in itself.
Perhaps you should take over Belgium.
We could strike a blow against the crows. There'd be no crows allowed.
No in crows in Belgium.
In my Belgium. There'd be like a massive dome built over the whole thing.
Oh, a massive dome.
when you come into my Belgium, which I'll have to rename, Belgetopia.
Belgetopia.
Belgetopia. Belgetopia for the French. Topia. Anyway. Yes, when you enter Belgetopia, you'll be frisked for crows. Obviously, they can't get through the big dome. So as long as nobody sneaks in with them hidden inside their beard, for example, beards will also obviously be forbidden.
Oh, it's a bit of an ironic blow there.
The protest will end with the summary punishment of all involved, as all good protests should. But afterwards, I'll run Belgetopia, and there'll be no crows. And yes, it'll be a step forwards for humanity.
They'll have a number of advantages, too.
Join me, cousins. Or other relatives. Meanwhile, speaking of the war against crows, a person named What does that say? I can't read without my glasses.
That says Ray.
Ray. A person named Ray says that an opposable beak could adopt the same functions as the thumb.
She's got a good point there.
He, she, or it has.
That's definitely the female spelling of Ray. despite your inability to see it.
I've never seen those glyphs together before. That might be because I can't read them. An opposable beak could do the trick.
Yeah.
And it is already quite opposable.
That's true.
A beak is opposable to itself.
That's how they work.
Yeah, yeah.
We hadn't thought of that.
You need two of them. A double-headed crow could do it. Ray contributes further to say that to bring doom on the village for keeping the Christmas decorations up past Epiphany.
That is true. That does bring doom.
Well, fair point. Bringing down Scotland one crow at a time. All the more reason to move to Belgetopia.
Where there will be no crows.
And
we'll be free from...
Belgians.
Well, no, because the Bel...
Well, they'd be Belgetopians.
They'll be Belgetopians, right.
So we'd be free from Belgians, though they would be all the same people.
Will they still make the beer?
Yeah, Belgetopian beer. Doesn't sound very good, does it?
No, Belgian beer I like.
It's quite close to bilge, which is...
Well, Belgium's quite close to bilge anyway.
Yeah, true. I've kept the bilge bit.
Yeah.
Maybe I should do it the other way around. I'll make it... Topium.
Topium.
Eumtopia.
Eumtopia.
Eumtopia. Yeah. It's kind of the noise you make when you're sort of talking in your sleep.
It's not the noise I make.
My country has been prophesized. And finally, Ray says that the Belgian Grand Prix takes place at Spa. Spa?
The supermarket?
Not the Spa, presumably. It'll be moved to the co-op.
Yeah, we'll move the Grand Prix to the co-op when we take over.
In Belgetopia, like down the dairy aisle, and then three times around the cereal.
You can lubricate it with the butter.
Do you usually lubricate a Grand Prix?
Well, it makes it more interesting.
It'd be a novel step. Yeah, it would actually. Yeah, all the pit crews. Yeah. It'd be kind of Benny Hill. All the pit crews would be just sort of sliding around in a sea of butter. We're heading towards Grand Prix porn at this point.
Well, I just like it when they crash.
So if we grease the road.
Yeah, and if they're crashing into like eggs and cheese. That'll be fine.
It's totally impossible to get killed in a hilarious crash.
No, if the crash is hilarious, no one could possibly die.
Yeah, yeah, so if we put, like banana skins, soft fruit, yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, well, that's the New World Order sorted out. Whilst we go put that in writing, it's time for another musical break. But after that, we'll be back talking about more stuff.
On air and online.
For students across Cambridge.
Your station.
Your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble. You're listening to Cam FM with me, Christopher Smoten.
And me, James Howe.
This is a show about silly news. And specifically in this case, we shall start by quoting the headline because I posit that this headline can't be beat in the field of spoken news. Italian man shot in head, sneezes out bullet, and lives.
Yes. You don't really need much more than that, do you?
That really is just, yeah.
That's one of the perfect headlines, I think. Everything is all summed up there. I don't think you can get a better headline.
The only way it possibly could have got better is if, upon sneezing it out, he'd done with sufficient force as to shoot another different Italian man.
Who then sneezed that out.
And so on and so on. We could have had some sort of wonderful game of pass the parcel, only with grievous gunshot wounds.
Yeah. Isn't that sweet?
Isn't it just? There's relatively little to describe except for that. It really is what it sounds like, in that somebody... there is something more, which is that he wasn't shot, he wasn't in a duel or something, and then went, my... No, hang on. a bullet. No, it was, the ridiculousness of the situation diffused the tension of the duel. He was apparently out wandering about on New Year's Eve. And apparently in Italy, the way you celebrate New Year's Eve is with gunfire.
Yes.
Gunfire into the air.
Nice and safe.
And when these things rained down, as it would. You wouldn't have that in Belgetopia, I should mention, by the way.
No. The advantage to fireworks is that they do explode, and thus you don't get large amounts of shrapnel falling down.
And they're also pretty when they explode.
And pretty.
Whereas the bullets very much just sort of go into the darkness.
And then fall down and hit Italian gentlemen in the head, causing them to sneeze bullets.
But in this case, it gets the guy like some quite amusing notoriety. So there clearly is an upside. But I think on balance, Bellishtopia is not going to stand for that.
No, I love the casual way in which this news story details with the fact that they're just shooting wildly in the air in Italy for New Year's.
Why not? Do it for all public holidays. Ascension Thursday. Probably isn't an Ascension Thursday. Whatever. I say it's Ascension Thursday. I ascended today. Kablam!
So perhaps they were aiming for some crows.
That is another reason you couldn't have had that in Bellishtopia. It's because of the dome.
The dome, yeah.
I'd be replacing that dome on a daily basis.
Or you design the dome such that it safely absorbs the bullet fire.
Yeah, right.
Then it would be safe to fire guns in the air without fear of them raining back down upon the populace.
True, that would be okay, yeah. I could coat the inside of the dome with jam or something else sort of sticky and like liable to absorb gunfire. That's one of the ways to make a homemade bulletproof vest is jam. That should let's do the trick. I'll get right on it. We'll get right on it. I should finish the show first. But amongst other things I'll do after the show.
I've just noticed in this story, it says he was struck in the side of the head, which is an unusual trajectory.
That is, yes. He must have been sort of leaning over sideways.
Either he was walking with his head sideways, or... And I don't want to, suggest that Italy has any history of corruption or organised crime, but perhaps that was a cover story for what really happened.
So, like, the mafia, like, tried to gun him down, but then after he sneezed it out, they said, well, that was amusing enough, I'm going to let you live.
Indeed.
Incidentally, I think it was from the sky. You won't see me no more.
I can't imagine a realistic situation where a bullet falling straight down from the sky would hit you in the side of the head. Unless, of course... It wasn't New Year's Eve. He might have been lying down on the street for a little bit of a sleep.
True, yes. He woke up and went, good Lord, I've got one heck of a hangover today. I feel like I've been shot in the head.
Yeah. And I feel a little sneezy. Oh, goodness, what's this?
Oh, I do believe it's gunfire. Coming from me, as rarely it does.
I need that like I need a hole in the head.
Oh, hey.
Thank you very much.
So I'm a little worried here about copycats. So you had this guy who sneezed out a bullet. Topping that is going to be difficult. You have to be firing a mortar round out of your armpit or something like that. That's going to be quite tricky.
Is there much in the way of competition for bodily excreted projectiles?
Not a massive amount.
I don't think the Guinness Book of Records have a category for that.
But the thing is, these fads can take off so quickly. With the kids and that,
All the kids, yeah.
Yeah,
I know all about the kids.
They hear about one man able to propel weaponry out of himself, and then they all want to do it. They'll start small. They'll get, swords and propel it from, their feet.
Bullets are a lot smaller than swords.
True, but... Yeah, okay. There's not a lot smaller you can get, really, is there?
They're technologically simpler.
Like a club, but...
A club.
That's quite, yeah. That's
perhaps,
quite difficult.
Perhaps a literal club foot?
Oh.
Oh. I'm reeling about today.
Two in one, 5 minutes. So, yes. moving swiftly on from Italian bullet man... this is a tricky story to link to.
Italy features in many films.
True.
Where do you show films in a cinema?
True.
Here's an unusual cinema.
Aha! Capital linking. I should keep you around,
yeah.
Mr. Howe.
They call me the Linkmeister.
You've proven your worth. Truly, you are a bubble burster today.
Haha. Shall I actually tell them what the story is now?
Go on.
It doesn't really work doing the link without actually then doing what you've tried to link to.
I suppose, if we must.
Anyway, this is another town/village whose location I again cannot see. Can you see?
No. It exists. It's in the world. Somewhere.
I think. Oh, in
oh,
Wales.
There we go. In Tredega,
which is in Wales. They've turned their clock tower. That's their clock tower into a four-screen multiplex cinema.
Mm-hmm. This clock tower, it should be pointed out, is 2.4 metres wide. So this is sort of, it's smaller than your average living room. Slightly smaller than the studio we're in now.
Yes, and this is a very small studio, which those people watching on the webcam, hello webcam, will be able to see. So what they've done is they've, because there was some film whose, again, name I cannot see. Can you see the name of the film?
I believe it was A Little Bit of Tom Jones.
No, really?
There we go, yes. No,
Tom Jones was in it.
It says to see a bit of Tom Jones, so yes. I'd assume that the film was named A Bit of Tom Jones.
No, I think Tom Jones starred in the film.
I suspect there was a particular film they were concerned with.
There was a particular film with Tom Jones in it, who, as we all know, is Welsh, parts of which were filmed in this town. So they set up in their clock tower four screens, sort of ascendingly.
Yeah.
With the final screen being at the top, having seats for one person.
Yeah. And this is... So they set this as a record attempt to produce the world's smallest cinema. And this, I posit, was a poor attempt at being the world's smallest cinema because they installed four screens. By chopping the top off the clock tower, you could immediately better their record for the world's smallest cinema.
I think to qualify as a cinema, there's a minimum number of screens, which is why they did that.
Ah, well, you've sensibled it up there.
I have.
All right, but as a general principle, if you're going to have records for the most rubbish example of X,
you probably don't want to try very hard.
Right, yes. Yeah. It's like the world's worst town hall. You know, I nominate my right shoe because it is very, very difficult to discuss matters of local government while seated in it.
Again, for kind of people organising those records, I think only things that are actually town halls would qualify.
So... I suppose I'll work that into the constitution of Belgetopia.
That your shoe is the town hall.
Yep. It'll be like that nursery rhyme.
Just to spite the system. No, before long you're gonna be ousted from power.
I'll be ousted from the advisory committee of the Guinness Book of World Records. Which is more or less the same thing.
Belgetopia will be in exactly the same position it is now. Sort of in limbo.
Growing
beards until a government arrives. Because when you've got no government, that's all you can do. Just cease to remove the excess hair from your face.
I'd have been more impressed if they'd stopped washing, say, for example. If they said, like, nobody will take a shower.
Well, that kind of requires that they take showers to start with. I don't know if you've been to Belgium, but it's not the most fragrant of places.
That would explain the unconsciousness that overcame me as I crossed the border.
There's a bonus, a lot of it does smell of beer, which is wonderful.
So is the beer mostly to disguise the horrible stench?
I don't know. I normally just go to places where there is beer, so it might be one of those anthropic principles.
The only reason you can observe Belgium is because there's beer.
Something like that, yeah.
I'm not sure we've wholly understood the anthropic principle, but...
I think I have. I just can't be bothered to explain it to you. Perhaps after the show.
Fair point. That's nice, though. What would you put forwards as your if you were to try and make a sort of a world's worst example for the Guinness Book of Records, what would you like to put forwards?
Oh, is this me?
Yes. I'm pumping you for ideas.
I don't really know. I haven't given it much consideration.
Curses. This idea pumping device is defective.
Yeah, we'll have to get that replaced.
Perhaps you could be the world's worst ideas generator.
Perhaps. Burn. I could.
Burn.
Perhaps.
I'm not sure that's in the Guinness Book of Records, but it ought to be. The webcamming's offline, says a person who is not Ray.
That's true.
Who I was pointed out to earlier, by the way. I should definitely not have referred to as he, she, or it.
No, you shouldn't do that.
My apologies, entity Ray.
I do notice the light on the webcam's not doing its usual shiny thing.
Indeed, no, it is.
Indeed.
It has been slain.
Oh, alas, alas.
Alas, alack. Oh, well. Let's move on from this cinema-related nonsense to Terry Pratchett-related nonsense.
Indeed.
This is the story that a set of commemorative stamps has been released bearing the images of Rincewind the Wizard, Nanny Ogg, obviously not all Pratchett-related, as the next one is Albus Dumbledore, A. Lion, I presume
I think that's Aslan.
Specifically Aslan.
The A, I think, stands for Aslan there.
But it should be pointed out that Aslan does look exactly the same as every other lion. Then we've also got this creature. I actually don't know what that creature is.
Oh, that's the Wicked Witch.
That's the Wicked Witch.
From Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
Ah.
They are the eponymous lion and witch.
Ah-ha.
And then the last one is not the wardrobe. Sense. The last one is Voldemort.
The last one is Voldemort. Which is an interesting choice for a commemorative stamp. Because, like, what message does it send to somebody if you send them a piece of mail, like, paid for using the image of Voldemort?
That's you like Harry Potter?
Well, it seems like it's like the mafia could use that, you know. It's like, you know, the horse head in bed is for the most extreme of transgressions. Like, mail carried by Voldemort is sort of one of the more minor ones. That's like, you know, you forgot to stop the milk at mafia headquarters. It's one of the more minor sins you can commit against the mafia.
Oh, okay. I'll bear that in mind. So that's good advice. If you do run the milk system at mafia headquarters.
Mafia. You really should get it right.
You should stop it when required. Yeah. So this is a nice set of magical stamps. That's really the whole story, yeah. I suppose.
They've taken the odd step of naming one of the stamps after Rincewood the Wizard.
Well, no, the stamp does correctly say Rincewind. It's just the ineptitude of whoever wrote this article.
Oh, okay, I see.
Especially as I think it's a local piece from Wiltshire, where Terry Pratchett is from. So the focus is on Terry Pratchett and his work. And they have managed to get the name of the principal character wrong, which just shows the standards of journalism these days.
Yeah, it does just sound like it's sort of a cheap knockoff of Rincewind.
Yeah.
So if you can't get the rights to Rincewind, like if you're doing Rincewind in panto, then you go, "Hello, little children, I'm Rincewood the Wizard, notorious coward and failure of magic." I'm not sure the kids would get the reference. Do kids read Discworld?
The kids love the Discworld.
Panto kids?
Oh, I don't know.
You know
who goes to pantos?
I always thought, like, adorable tiny children. But I haven't been to a panto in quite some time.
I don't know. From what I recall, it's sort of 10 and under, and then 30 and over.
Ah, okay.
There's sort of this sort of twilight gap in the middle, where you don't see any pantos.
Yeah. What happens to you at the age of 30 that sort of makes you go, "Yes, panto, I'm back in the saddle"?
Perhaps it's the innate wish to see men dressed as women.
That is true.
Or if you feel you don't participate enough in life and just want to shout. Because shouting at the television doesn't really achieve anything, so you want to go shout at panto where... Okay. Again, it doesn't really achieve anything, but they give the illusion of it achieving something.
So it could be a kind of therapy.
A kind of therapy, yes.
Sort of like a psychotherapist might recommend to somebody who's sort of tremendously withdrawn. They might say, "Go to the panto and shout things."
And there's always free sweets as well.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. You could work up, you know. You could sort of like start with the most unambitious shouting, like, "He's behind you."
That's sort of kind of the age range for sweets as well. Sort of 10 and under, and then... Well, perhaps not 30, sort of... When you get to 60, I think you really get back into sweets again.
Yeah, right. You've got to start carrying Werther's Originals around.
Exactly, the Werther's Originals.
More or less by sort of...
Your toffees, yeah.
Fierce of law.
All those sort of things.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, what will you give to adorable grandchildren? In fact, so presumably it's
a trip to the Panto.
Proximity to children. Ha ha! I think we've hit on something here. Although that still doesn't explain why parents don't avoid the Panto when they have the power. That's, you know, they've taken their small children there, but yet they themselves watch as well.
Well, there's from what I understand, there's quite a few jokes in there for the dads.
Ah, right, yes. These are sort of the carry-on style innuendos.
Yes,
Where you have to sort of go... and then the children say, Daddy, what's funny about that? And you have to say, I'll tell you when you're 30.
Indeed.
Which is what I tell the children that I have. Anyway, moving on. It is time for the Anthology of Marginal Interest.
Do we have a jingle for that?
Not yet, but we could make one up.
Shall I just go for it?
Yeah, go on. Give us a jingle. The margin of anthology interest. Go.
Anthology of marginal interest.
Excellent. I love it.
It's great. Were we recording that?
Not today. I'm going to need you here once a week until death.
Okay.
Okay, but item of marginal interest one. These are basically news stories from this week, which have exactly one thing to recommend them. Typically a stupid headline. In that spirit, item number one carries the headline, Man Tries to Drag Teenager in Car. Now, you might think, God, that's a horrible story. What's it doing on a frivolous show like this? That sounds like a horrible tale of impropriety. But no, all you have to do is comma and or bracket it appropriately until you get the phrase man tries to drag open parenthesis teenager in car close parenthesis at which point you end up in with the scenario of a sort of man futilely dragging a car containing a teenager presumably a sort of act of dedicated parenting.
I did not get that one.
You thought I was going for the horrible child molestation joke. No, perish that thought.
No, I thought it were like there was like trying to drag a teenager with a car.
As in to... Oh, I see. Oh, that would be even more horrible.
That would be even more horrible.
That's murder.
I'm glad we avoided that.
No murder, no molestation, only ill-advised towing. One of the most family-friendly of topics.
So the next item in the anthology is the... again, just a simple headline. Miliband Insult Counselor Quits.
Which is a job I want, basically. Which,
yes.
I want to be his insult counsellor.
Just don't worry, don't worry, Ed or Dave, which one?
I mean, like, you know, so I think Dave.
Dave's
insult counsellor. Okay.
Dave, don't worry. He didn't mean it. It's fine.
I was thinking more of proactive insult counsellor, like as in, suppose for a moment you're the insult counsellor.
Oh, counselling on how to insult.
Yeah, I might bound into your office and go, quick, I've got the president of Burundi outside and I need to call him an awful individual. What shall I say?
Oh, right. So again, so many levels this works on.
That's not a very good insult counsellor. I demand you stop observing the nature of your job and start giving me viable insults I can use against the president.
I'm sorry, sir.
Ah, you're fired, insult counsellor.
Do we actually know what this story actually refers to?
I think it's something fairly mundane. Like his counsellor went on Twitter and called him cheap because for £50,000 he was prepared to go and manage Sunderland FC.
So it's
probably not manage Sunderland FC.
It's
probably support.
It's quotations Miliband insult close quotations counsellor.
Right. Yes. Quits. This is one. It's important not to bracket correctly.
Yes. Otherwise, we can't take it on our frivolous news-based panel show. This isn't a panel show.
This isn't a panel show.
This is a radio show.
Who are we kidding? This isn't even a radio.
We barely have walls.
We're just set talking in the dark. Anyway,
next one.
Dog versus tree showdown. I just wanted to suggest that story existed. And the odd thing is, if you actually click on the link, it does actually mean what it says it means. It was a man who trained his dog to fight a tree.
Who won?
I believe the tree.
The tree.
It's sort of, it's like, imagine if you're playing Mortal Kombat, and you select dog, and your opponent selects tree. Then...
Well, the dog has more moves. but true. I suppose the tree has higher stamina.
Yeah, yeah, right. The guy making the tree very much goes off and has a cup of tea, being that his only two moves are grow and die. That's the other thing
I wouldn't use the second move.
You should never press the B button. That's classic flaw of the beginner at tree Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, never press B.
Moving on.